Well, good morning, church. My name is Cody, and I have the absolute joy of being a part of the team here as the pastor of youth and young adults. And it's new for me. It's cool. It's exciting. And I'm just so glad you joined us this morning. You made it. You were able to fit into your pants after all that Christmas food. Maybe you were here at one of our Christmas Eve services, and you're like, hey, I like that. We'll give it another try this weekend. Whatever brought you here, I am just so glad you're here. I'm so glad that I get to spend some time with you this morning as we look at Psalm 23. Quickly before we get into this, one announcement that I've been told I need to correct. Prime timers, 55 plus, you aren't actually meeting on January 3rd. It's January 10th. There ain't going to be anyone here next week. So come on the 10th, not the 3rd. Quick correction. So today I wanted to do something a little bit different for our service. I wanted to bring in a little bit of youthfulness. I mean, I'm the youth guy. I can do that. I can get away with it. But don't worry. I know, like, some of you guys are like, oh boy, what's he going to make us do? We're not going to be prank calling anyone or playing dodgeball or like splitting up into teams and having a sweet wide game. Although that would probably be really fun. And I'd love to do that with some of you guys. Like with my students, I'd love to hit some of you in the head with a dodgeball. It's just part of what we get to do. But I wanted to bring a different element that we do with our junior high youth on Thursday nights. It's called a 10 for 10. What's a 10 for 10? Glad you asked. Let me tell you. A 10 for 10 is something that we've made as a regular part of our program where we intentionally take 10 minutes to work through a text, ask questions of it, study the context of it, and then spend some time at the end coming up with 10-word prayers from it. We believe that the Bible is real, that it's alive, that it's living, that it can actually make a difference in how we live our lives, and we want our students to know that as well. Right here at KC, we're all about knowing Jesus and making him known. So our hope is that after our students have written these prayers, they take it home. They put it in their journals, they put it in their mirrors, maybe they make a cool little thing for their phone background and take a screenshot of it, and they're just reminded of it throughout the week so that they can be reminded of what God was speaking to them through that moment and be reminded of the truth and the life and the power of Scripture. So we're going to be doing that today. We're going to be doing a 10 for 10, which some of you guys are really excited about because you're like, oh, 10 minutes? He's only talking for 10 minutes? That's going to be great. We're already 2 minutes in. That's only 8 minutes to go. It's going to be different. We're going to spend a little bit more time. We're going to be journeying through Psalm 23, but we are going to give you some time at the end. The band's going to come up and play a song for you just to reflect and spend some time coming up with your own 10-word prayer that you can take home. Good? We're good? Got it? Any questions? Too bad. So I want to invite you all to grab your Bibles, fire up that Bible app, grab the Pew Bible in front of you. If you don't have a Bible, man, come talk to us because we'd love to get one in your hands. One of the things that's going to come out of this service is just the utter importance of being in your Word constantly. So if you don't have one, we want to be able to equip you with that. Turn to Psalm 23. And we do a thing here at KC where we stand to read the Bible. So if you're willing and able, would you stand with me as we read? We do this because throughout your weeks, you hear all kinds of voices. And every weekend, we want to pause and come under the voice of truth. So Psalm 23, a psalm of David. Let's read together. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me to right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. God, thank you for this psalm, for the truth that is in this psalm. I ask that you would lead us today to know you more, to meet you as you call us. In your name, amen. So this is a psalm that for the last number of months, God has just been really impressing on my heart, on my life. He's been taking me through this really wild journey of like self-discovery. Well, not self-discovery, of like Jesus discovery through it. And it's been awesome. And one of the biggest questions that has come out of it for me is this question of like, Cody, where do you find your confidence? Where do you find your confidence? You see, David, right after out the get-go here, he's making this massive assumption, this huge assumption, right in verse 1, the Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. David is assuming that without God, there is something that you lack. Without God, there is something that you lack. He's saying, look, whatever you're trusting, whatever you're finding your confidence, and if it's not Jesus, you're missing out. You're lacking something. Yeah. You got it. Preach. And what he's doing as he's doing this, he's showing us that real confidence is found as we depend on and dwell with Jesus. Throughout this whole psalm, this big idea that David is wrapping up for us is that real confidence is found as we depend on and dwell with Jesus. Now, moment of complete transparency. I hate this. I absolutely hate this. The last few months has not been a good, like an easy journey for me as I've been thinking about this. Why? Because if you know me and you ask people who know me, I've got some major control issues. Right? Like, ask my wife. Friday night's perfect example. We were at the in-laws for Christmas Friday night. We were coming back home. We got to load up the car, and I'm losing my mind because we got so much stuff. I'm like, I want to control where everything goes. I'm like, I can't take all that home. I don't want to take this home. And I'm like, I just can't do it. And I wanted control. I was losing control. And I hated it. Right? Like, I want to be the one that creates my own life. I want to be the one that, you know, I don't have to depend on anyone. Because if I have to depend on someone, then maybe I'm going to appear weak. And if I appear weak, then I'm not in control. Right? So it's having God come into my life right now and be like, Cody, you're lacking something because you're not depending on me all the time. I hate it. I haven't liked it. It's been hard. Because I don't want to give up control. I don't want to step into, you know, maybe something that's better for me because I think I know what's right for me. But God has been telling me, look, you need to dwell in me. Like, if you want real confidence, not the confidence that you create, not the comments that you put out, because I think most people would say, yeah, Cody, you're a pretty confident guy. And I'd say, you know, most of the time I probably am, but I've also created like this facade for myself where I can't appear weak. I can't let my insecurities show because weak people aren't in control. Like, I just have this mindset that weak people aren't in control. And Jesus has been saying, yeah, guess what? You're actually not in control because you're not depending on me. You need to give that control up. And you see, today, as we get into this text, David is saying the same thing to each of you. Right? He's saying, look, what are you trusting in? Where are you finding your confidence? And if it's not Jesus, guess what? You're lacking something. You're missing out on something. Now, before we jump in, we got to unpack a few things here because there's a whole lot of talk about sheep and shepherds in this passage. Now, show of hands, how many of you know the first thing about shepherds or sheep? A few of you. Follow-up question. How many of you know the first thing about shepherds and sheep in ancient Palestine? Not as many hands go up there. Right? Like, I don't. I live in Kamloops. Before Kamloops, I lived in Grand Prairie. Before Grand Prairie, I lived in Vernon. Before that, I lived, well, Grand Prairie again, but then Smithers. Right? So, like, I've lived in BC my entire life. It was a small wandering patch into, you know, Alberta. But I don't know the first thing about what it is like to shepherd sheep in ancient Palestine. And that's what David is talking about in this whole psalm. So don't worry. In preparation for this, I read a book. So I am now a self-proclaimed expert on all things sheep and shepherding. So we're in luck. I can help you wander through this. I want to recommend, though, that book that I read is called A Shepherd's Look at Psalm 23. It's by Philip Keller. Phenomenal book. It's a short read. So I highly encourage it. I think it's like $7 on Amazon. Even better, I'm Dutch. I love that low price point. Pick it up. It's great. And so as we get going in here, we want to take a look at those different nuances of shepherding and sheep that David's really teaching us about. And as we do, we're going to realize that he's taking us through four different things. We've got the proclamation of a better shepherd, the provision of a better protection, or provision of a better life, the promise of a better protection, and the prominence in a better house. And the first one we're going to get into is the proclamation of a better shepherd. This comes out of verse 1. The Lord is my shepherd, I lack nothing. So, like we said, David, he's the one writing this. Now, if you're new to church, you're checking us out, again, welcome here. What you need to understand about David is he was a king. And he wasn't just like any old king. Like, next to Jesus, David was arguably the greatest king in all of Israel's history. Right? Like, the dude had power, he had status, he had wealth. Literally, if anyone could have said, I've got confidence, I've got control, things are under control, it would have been David. Because he had it all. Now, what you also need to understand about David is that he grew up the son of a shepherd. And he also spent some time shepherding before he became a king. So this is a guy who's writing this psalm, and he's got some major cred when it comes to knowing the ins and outs, the needs and the dangers of what it's like to shepherd in ancient Palestine, way more than I do. But as we get into this psalm, verse 1, we notice something that David's doing here, right? He's not gloating about all the stuff he has, the power, the position, the wealth. He's not saying, I'm the man, I've got it made. Like, I've controlled my own destiny. No, he actually identifies himself with a sheep. Right? He says, the Lord is my shepherd. He's pointing to someone greater, someone who can provide for him, someone who can give him protection, because he's saying, none of that stuff I have can actually do what I'm really after. Only the Lord can. And he's my shepherd. As he does that, like I said, he takes on the identity of a sheep. Now, you might be wondering why that's so significant. Brace yourself. Don't get mad at me. I'm just teaching the Bible. There, all throughout Scripture, if you read through the Bible, humanity is often compared to sheep. And David does it here in this psalm. So if you're, you know, like offended by what I'm about to say, please email simon@kamloopsalliance.com. He would love to answer any comments that you have if you're offended by what I'm about to say. Because sheep, if you don't know anything about them, they are stupid. They are stubborn. They are full of fear. And without the care of a good shepherd, they're completely helpless. Right? Like, they're the most, like, useless animal in the animal kingdom. I don't, like, I look at this, I'm like, come on, David, like, why can't you go, like, the Lord is my Mufasa? It's like a Lion King reference for those of you who don't know. The Lord is my Mufasa. Like, I can get behind being a lion cub. Like, that sounds way cooler than being like a stupid woolly sheep. But that's not what David does. David picks one of the most helpless animals. And throughout Scripture, we're compared to like the most helpless animals because really that's just what we are. Right? Like, we're stubborn. Sometimes we can be pretty stupid. We think we have things figured out, but without the care of a good shepherd, without the care of the Lord leading us, guiding us, showing us the way, we're completely helpless. David's pointing to a better provider, a better protector. And what I love about David in this psalm, he's going, the Lord is my shepherd. Right? Like, he could have been writing to all of Israel and being like, hey guys, the Lord is our shepherd. But what he does, he says, no, the Lord is my shepherd. This is a deeply personal psalm that David is writing. Right? Like, yes, the Lord is the shepherd of all of his people. But David's saying, the Lord is my shepherd. And some of you need to know that today. Later on in the Gospel of John, Jesus claims that he is the good shepherd. So everything that David's writing about today, Jesus is saying, I am the fulfillment of that. And I know my sheep and I call them by name. Right? Like, David's pointing us to a shepherd who's radically invested in us as individuals. Some of you have this picture of God as being so far off, and David's saying, no, the Lord is your shepherd, and he knows your name, and he's calling you by name. Will you come under his care? Because David is saying that when Jesus is your shepherd, there is absolutely nothing that you lack. Nothing that you lack. And here he's picturing his time as a shepherd as he's, you know, taking them throughout the wilderness and wandering with them to different places of nourishment and grass and water. And he's saying, look, when I was a shepherd, my sheep, like, they had nothing to fear. They had everything they needed. I took care of them. I gave them their nourishment. I protected them from animals and thieves. And he's saying, in the care of my shepherd, the Lord, I have all of that as well. I lack nothing. So think about your life right now. Some of you have done really well. You've got, you know, like, money in the bank. You've got a sweet house, dope car. And, you know, you've got, like, thousands of followers on Instagram. You've got degrees on your wall. And you're like, oh, this is sweet. I got life figured out. I'm in control. I've got this all going. I'm there with you. Right? Like, sometimes I look at my life, I'm like, man, I've managed to control stuff pretty good for myself. David could have said the same thing. Right? Like, anything we have, David had, like, millions times more because he was a king. Right? But what David says in this psalm is that when these are the things, when your position, your wealth, your status, your power, when those are the things that are guiding you and leading you and where you find your worth and your purpose and your confidence, you are like a sheep under the care of an inattentive, abusive, and absent shepherd. Because you're always searching. You're never satisfied. You always want something greener. The shepherd's not there to care for you. He doesn't give you what you need. You're always looking. You're always wishing, oh, where's something better? How can I get some more followers? How can I get some more money? Right? David's saying that when Jesus is shepherding you, you lack nothing. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. So we have to ask, what in the world does it look like to lack nothing? Right? Does it mean that, like, when we go under the care, when we depend on and we dwell with Jesus, that all of a sudden everything we've ever wanted, all those things that we search for but can't find, all those just, like, magically are fulfilled? Like, we finally get a sweet house, we get a dope car, we get lots of money, we get all these, like, sweet followers that love us and tell us how cool we are? No. That's not what happens when you depend on, you dwell with Jesus. To answer this, I want to point this to the words of Paul in his letter to the Philippians. We spent some time here this fall, and he says this in his letter. I think it's a key to understanding what it looks like to lack nothing. He says, I have learned the secret to being content in any and every situation. Listen, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want, I can do everything through him who gives me strength. You see, to lack nothing does not mean that all of our desires will be fulfilled, but it does mean that our deepest, most, like, longing of a desire will be. To be lacking nothing is to be content regardless of our situation, regardless of whether you're like David and have everything or you're struggling to make ends meet right now. To be content in every situation because you know that as you depend on, you dwell with Jesus, the good shepherd, he's going to provide, he's going to protect, he's going to give you what you need. To depend on, to lack nothing is to be denying yourself. Like, this is where it's really hard for me because I want control. It's to be denying yourself, denying that you have any control. Denying this assumption that our culture is teaching us that we have to be all about self-promotion. And to be lacking nothing looks like to be daily saying, Jesus, I will follow you. I will listen to your call. As you call me by name, I will come. And I will depend on you, and I will dwell with you. Right? He wants us, this great shepherd who knows you by name, who loves you so deeply, who's so radically invested in you. He wants you to answer his call. So can you honestly this morning say that you lack nothing? Can you this morning say that you lack nothing? Here's a suggestion for that answer. Did you go Boxing Day shopping? Right? Like, the day after, we just get so many gifts and some of the things we want, we're like, well, I gotta go out and get more. Right? Like, I lack nothing on Christmas until I get to Boxing Day. I'm with you. I went Boxing Day shopping. Right? Like, I'm not like trying to guilt you. I did it, right? So we always want more. We always want better. We're always searching for something different. Now, during my time at Bible college, one of my mentors there, he shared with me his life, one of his life rules, one of his rules of life. And I've kind of adopted it. I've tried to adopt it as my own. And it's this: I will not let circumstances, people, or status dictate my joy. I will not let circumstance, status, or people dictate my joy. Why? Because my joy is intrinsically tied to a dependence and dwelling with Jesus. It's a gift that he gives us from his Spirit. I was just reading that this morning, the fruits of the Spirit in Galatians, right? Like love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, gentleness, self-control, right? This gift of the Spirit. And when I have that, when I'm depending on, I'm dwelling with Jesus, like it doesn't matter what situation, what circumstance, or what people come my way, because I've got everything I need in the Good Shepherd who will provide and protect me. But like I said, the last few months, this psalm has just really challenged me, because if I'm honest with you, I haven't been living in this posture. Right? Like I've been letting all kinds of things dictate my joy. I've been letting my fear drive my confidence. I've been really wrestling with some of the stuff that's going on in my life and things around me. And I haven't been having this posture where I'm depending on and dwelling with Jesus, and he's coming in. He's slowly, with the care of a good shepherd, saying, Cody, just come. I'm calling. I love you. Hear my call. Come with me. Journey with me. I want to lead you to a better life. Because with the better shepherd comes the provision of a better life. Right? David writes, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. A better life. Now, what you need to understand is that Israel is not Kamloops. Israel is not Kamloops. Right? Like a shepherd in ancient Palestine, he couldn't just open his door, walk to his barn, open the gates, whistle to his sheepdog, and just kind of like drive his flock to like the lush grass and the refreshing waters of Riverside Park. That wasn't an option in Israel. Israel is dry. It's hot, it's rocky, and I realize I'm describing Kamloops in the summer, but it was drier, hotter, and rockier, and on top of that, there wasn't just like a copious amount of green grass, pasture lands, or refreshing waters. So the life of a shepherd was one where they had to be constantly on the move, and they had to be leading their sheep to where they could find the nourishment they needed. Constantly guiding, knowing that this rocky place was not going to give them what they need. So they had to be leading their sheep, guiding their sheep. And David is talking about this here. Now, remember, sheep, they're stupid and they're stubborn, right? So as the shepherd's like, hey, follow me. I want to bring you to where you need to go. The sheep are like, but I know this looks cool. And ooh, maybe over here. And they're like just wandering around because like they don't want to follow the shepherd. They're just like so blind. They're looking like, ooh, where's the food? Where's the food? Ooh, where's the water? Where's the water? And it's like, oh, you can just imagine that the shepherd's like, oh, stupid sheep, why aren't you following me? That's what I'm thinking as I'm reading this, like, dumb sheep, what are you doing? And then I realize, oh, I'm not just talking about sheep anymore. Right? Because I do the same thing. We do the same thing. We go, ooh, well, maybe this job will give me what I need. Maybe this person will fulfill a desire I have. Maybe this sort of whatever it is, this car, whatever it is for you, maybe that's what will give me this sense of longing, purpose, desire, confidence, whatever it is. And David's saying, no, that's only found if you will follow the shepherd. That's only found if you'll follow the good shepherd. Right, so David's writing, right? Here's what the shepherd does. He makes, he leads, he guides. My personal favorite in all of this, listen. He refreshes my soul. He restores my soul. Think about that. The refreshing of our souls does not come from something that Jesus wants to lead us to, but rather from the good shepherd himself. The refreshing of our soul does not come from something that Jesus wants to lead us to, but comes from him. In a paraphrase of Jesus' words in Matthew 11, Eugene Peterson, he's the guy who, he's a pastor, and he translated the Message translation. Some of you know that version of the Bible. He paraphrases Jesus' words in Matthew 11 like this. He says, "Come to me. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly." Man, how does that sound? Right? Like, keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. That sounds a lot less hectic than how many of us just lived our 2019 and are gearing up to live our 2020. Right? So David is saying, if you will just fix your eyes on the shepherd, he's going to lead you to what you need most. And what you need to realize is one of the ways that Jesus leads us to himself is he leads us to his word. Right? Like, he leads us to this because this is alive, this is living, this is active. And this is where Jesus reveals so much about himself to us. Right? So Jesus wants to do this, but like a shepherd leading sheep to pasture lands and water, they get there. The shepherd can't like get down and work the sheep's mouth and be like, eat and like drink, right? Like, he can't do that for him. The shepherd has to follow him and then actually has to do that himself. So as Jesus leads us to the Bible, we can't just go, okay, I'm in it. Jesus, refresh me. Jesus, restore me. Like, I'm here. Come on. What are you doing? I'm waiting. No, we have to be in it. We have to be reading it. We have to be asking questions after it. We have to be studying it. We have to be spending, dwelling, keeping company with him if we want to learn to live freely and lightly. Now, what I also love as I was learning about sheep and shepherds is that they would often lead their flock out at the first light in the morning. And they would do this for a specific reason. That was because at first light, there would still be dew on the ground. And so as they led their flock out, the sheep would not only be able to get the nutrients they needed from the grass and the shrubbery, but they would also get like a refreshment from the dew and the water. And the way sheep work, because they're weird, is that they only need a little bit of water to be able to last them an entire day. And so they would lead them out at first light so that right at the beginning of the morning, they would have everything they need for their day's journey. And so with this in mind, my son and I, my little six-year-old boy, we started a practice together that we do. And most mornings, we've decided that, and it happens most mornings, that we want to spend the first moments of our morning in the Bible, meeting Jesus, being met by him, being refreshed, being restored. And so he'll come out of his room in the morning, most mornings, and I'll go to him, "Hey, Jude, what did you read today? What story did you read? And what does it teach you about Jesus?" And it's been so cool just to see him at like 6 years old, always already reading his little storybook Bible and learning and understanding things about Jesus that like I had no idea when I was six. That's Jesus meeting him as he's dwelling with Jesus. Now, some mornings, my little guy comes out and he comes to me and goes, "Hey, Daddy, what did you read this morning?" And I go, "Nothing." Because that happens to be a morning that I decide that whatever happened on social media in the 5, 6, 7, or 8 hours that I have decided to sleep that night was more important than meeting and being refreshed and restored by Jesus. So I love it because God, through my little boy, is calling me back to him saying, "Cody, you got to depend on, you got to dwell with me right here in the morning. Right here in the morning, before you do anything else." And I've been wondering what that would look like, right? Like, a lot of us have different times that we've set aside in our day, and it's like, "Hey, this is my time where I'm going to spend. I'm going to read the Bible. I'm going to pray. I'm going to do that practice." But I've wondered, like a sheep and a shepherd going out and getting their nourishment for the day, what it could look like to start our day. The first voice we hear every morning. Instead of a text message, instead of a Facebook notification or social or Instagram or whatever it is you're on, instead of watching TikTok, instead of watching the news or catching up on sports highlights, what if you met Jesus? What if we met Jesus and were refreshed and renewed by him in the morning? Here's what I'm willing to guarantee will happen. I'll guarantee it. If you're willing to do this work, you will find yourself more content, more joy-filled, more refreshed, and more ready to face whatever circumstance you will come across on your day. I guarantee that if you're willing to depend on and dwell with Jesus right as you wake up in the morning, it might mean you have to get up 20 minutes earlier. But if you're willing to do that, I guarantee that he will meet you and he will dwell with you there and he will nourish you and restore you and give you what you need to go through the day. Why? Because in the same way that David knows that sheep need that nourishment, he knows that we need that as well. And that nourishment sets us up for the day. In a sense, it provides us with a bit of protection for that day. So we have this promise of a better protection as we depend on and dwell with Jesus. So David continues, and I love this section particularly of this psalm. He says, even though I walk through the darkest valley, even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Right? So the life of a shepherd, it wasn't an easy one. Like, it's dry, it's hot, it's gross. There's not a whole lot of food around. But on top of that, there's dangerous animals. There's sheep thieves. And so the shepherds had to be constantly on the lookout for all these things as they're journeying with their sheep to new pasture lands. Right? They've got to be on it. And the sheep, like, because they're so fearful, you breathe on them wrong and they like go scattering. Right? So they had to have a trust in their shepherd. Like, they saw their rod and their staff, like, okay, I can trust this guy. He's going to care for me. He's going to protect me. He's along with this journey with me. I don't have to worry about anything. I don't have to fear. The sheep had to trust, right? Like, I'm sure they would have rather had, like, Riverside Park to just stay in all the time. Like, they would way rather have had that. They don't have to walk. They don't have to worry. I mean, the only thing they had to worry about is flooding. So they don't have to, like, worry about any fear or danger if they would have something like that. But that's not their reality. Israel is valleys, there's canyons, there's animals, there's thieves. And so it was a journey, and they wanted that protection. Now, I think that's similar to us, right? Like, we would way rather have a life of comfort and ease. Man, I would way rather have a life of comfort and ease. But our reality is that we get discomfort, and we have burdens, right? Like, we want that mountaintop experience all the time, but our reality is that we walk through valleys on that journey. So one of the valleys that I've been walking through in the past few months is this new transition that I'm coming into, this new role that I'm coming into. From associate youth pastor to the pastor of youth and young adults. And this fear and these insecurities that I've been wrestling as I think about transition. Now, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm so excited for it. Like, I'm pumped. I can't wait to see what God's going to do as we continue to seek him and let him guide us. But I begin to get fearful and insecure because I'm like, well, what if this doesn't happen? What if it doesn't work out? What if I'm not strong? What if I can't control? What if I'm not as good as the last guy? Or, like, people keep telling me, like, oh, you're going to do great. And I'm like, I know, but what if I don't? And I got these fears and these insecurities. And I'm like, oh, this valley, this sucks. And maybe some of your valleys are a journey through a loss. Maybe it's a job or a loved one. Maybe your valley right now is a journey through an addiction or other temptations. You just seem to be walking through it. Maybe it's an uncertainty about what the future holds. Maybe your valley right now is some troubles in your marriage, or it's just whatever it is, right? Whatever your valley is, maybe it's a struggle with crippling anxiety and depression. All of these things, as we journey through, they leave us feeling hopeless and full of fear, right? Like my journey, man, I've been so full of fear and so full of insecurity. I'm like, what is going on? What if, right? Like, we begin to ask, what if, what if, what if? All of these lead to hopelessness and fear. And what David is saying in verse 4 is that even though I will fear no evil, for you are with me. He's saying that we don't have to fear. There can be hope and fearlessness along the journey. Why? Because we have the protection of someone who loves and cares for us deeply. We have him beside us. He's going to lead us to where we can be safe. Right? He's saying, come to me, depend on me, dwell with me. You can have confidence during the valleys. One of the ways he does that, again, the Bible. One of the ways he does that is he leads us back to the truths that we've been depending on and dwelling in with him in the Bible, right? So for me, as I'm in these fears and insecurities, I just keep hearing Jesus' words that Paul wrote in the letter to the Corinthians, where he says, my grace is sufficient for you, and my power is made perfect in your weakness. He's saying, Cody, it doesn't matter. Like, give up the control. It doesn't matter if you're weak. I am strong, and I am with you, and I will do it. So then I can begin to say, even though I have fears and insecurities as I take on this new role, I will fear no evil because you are with me. As Jesus leads you to the Bible, really, he did this in his own life, right? Think about his wilderness experience. This is why this is so important, because our shepherd used this in his own life. His wilderness experience, he was tempted. His first response for every single one of those was scripture. Why? Because it's alive, it's active. There's a pastor who once said that a quiver full of arrows to a Christian is a mind full of the Bible. Because we can then take it and use the truth of it to use whatever comes our way, so that we can say, even though I'm walking through anxiety, even though I'm struggling with temptation, even though I don't know what my future holds, even though I have these fears, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. David's saying that we don't have to fear the journey, because we have the care and the protection of a loving, better shepherd. Now, David finishes off this psalm with this picture of a prominence in a better house. It's beautiful. Prominence in a better house. He writes, you prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and love will dwell with me all of my days, and or will follow me all the days, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. So one of the things that shepherds would have to do is, as they were coming up through their journey into the new pasture lands, is they'd go ahead of their sheep and they'd walk the land. And they would do this because they knew that when they came to a new land, there would probably be some poisonous shrubbery and some dangers that lay hidden. And so he would come and they'd go and they'd search it and they'd check it, so that they could then set out their sheep as they, you know, they got to that land. They know that some of the sheep aren't going to stay with them. They're going to journey into all these other different worlds. They might go down a path because they think, oh, that's better, or maybe there's there. And what they wanted to do was make sure that they had known the land. They walked the land. They knew what they were going to be coming up against. And what they would also do as they came into this pasture land is it's weird. They'd cover like their sheep with this ointment or this oil. So this is that picture of, you anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. They'd cover the sheep in them. And it would protect them from ticks and flies and all of other gross, disgusting things that shouldn't have been created. So that as they were wandering around, they had, you know, they didn't have to have a fear that they were just going to get bombarded by all these diseases that some of these things carry and break. And they didn't have to worry so much about the poisonous shrubbery, the dangers, because the shepherd had walked the land and then he had given them something to guide them and be with them on their journey. So you get this picture of Jesus now. We just celebrated how he came and he dwelled to dwell with us. Christmas story. He came to walk the lands that we walk, to go through the struggles that we go through. He was picked on. He was beaten. He was abused, right? He died for us. He did all of this. And now that he's done all this, he says to us, I know what you're going through. Your valley, I know it because I've been there. I've done it. I've walked the land. I've seen the hidden dangers. I've seen the poisonous shrubbery that you're about to walk into. And I'm going to give you someone. I'm going to anoint you with someone. He pours out his spirit on his people. As you depend on and dwell with Jesus, he says, have my spirit. My spirit's going to be over you. He's going to guide you. He's going to lead you. He's going to be with you on that journey as you wander around and you're searching as you look for that final resting, that final dwelling with me. And he says, you can experience my goodness and my love right now. Sure, you're on a journey to it for eternity, but you can experience it right now because I've walked the land. I've given you my spirit to protect you, to guide you. Right, all of this is to lead his sheep towards himself, to the goodness and love of dwelling in the house of the Lord forever. So we get this picture as we wrap up Psalm 23. This picture not of an escape to something better, which sometimes we really just want. Like we don't want to go through the journey. We want to just escape to something better. But we get this picture in this psalm of a promise of a powerful, constant provider who is always with us as we go through our journey. And so as you do that journey, if you're willing to depend on and dwell with Jesus, you'll find this real confidence in a better shepherd who will provide you with a better life. He'll promise you a better protection and lead you to a way better house. I'm going to call the band up now. So as I journeyed through this psalm over the last few months, as I checked this out, I was like, hey, we should do like a kind of 10 for 10 idea, because we've done this with our youth. My 10-word prayer that has come out of it has been this. Jesus, because you are with me, I will not fear. Jesus, because you are with me, I will not fear. So I ask you, what's yours? The band's going to play a song. And I just want to encourage you to sit and reflect. There's papers in your bulletin. Maybe you write it on your note, on a note on your phone. But I want to encourage you to sit and reflect and write a 10-word prayer from Psalm 23 to help you as you leave. Father, late grandfather, a number of years ago, he had some health issues, and it led to him having to get half of his legs amputated. And I remember going to visit him in the hospital shortly after that happened, and the guy was just still so full of peace, so full of joy. And I'm sitting there being like, dude, you just lost half your leg. How can that be? And beside him on his night table was his Bible. And he could have this joy and this peace and this confidence because he was depending on and dwelling with Jesus. If you wrote a 10-word prayer here tonight, we're not done with the youthy stuff yet. We like to make people at youth do things that they're not comfortable with. And so if you wrote a 10-word prayer, I want to encourage you before you leave, turn to someone around you and share it with them. And as you go, would you just hear this blessing? As you depend on and dwell with Jesus, would he bless you and keep you? Would he make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you? Would he turn his face towards you and give you peace? Blessings, church. Happy New Year.